Chapter 3. Are you on your own going to unfuck yourself? Step 3. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. I did this step with help from an atheist, and at the point I took it, I would have probably said that I was an atheist too. The step, stripped of reference to divine power, becomes, you don't know what you're doing, you better make a decision to accept help. This is a big stumbling block for many addicts. To flash forward to the present day, or to stay where you already are if you're not a time traveller, I'm now on step 12, part of which is to help others. So I spend a significant amount of time around addicts at various stages of recovery. When I encounter addicts that are still using, it's fascinating to observe which of the first three steps will be the obstacle that prevents them realizing change. If it's step one, that means they flatly deny they have a problem. There's nothing wrong with me, they say. I like drinking in the daytime, or cocaine keeps me thin. Honestly, they say mad stuff like that. There's not much you can do in these cases except admire the battlements on the fortress of self-imposed unawareness. When step two is the obstacle, they know they have a problem and admit it, but cannot come to believe that there is a better way. They say things like, I need to drink, it's the only thing that keeps me sane, or I can't imagine life without drugs. When confronted with this, I can only share with them my own story, identify with their lack of hope, but tell them in my experience change is possible, that my current life is proof of that possibility. When people are resistant to step three, it means they accept they have a problem, they believe change is possible, but they think that they will author that change through self-will, determination, guts, moxie, cunning, whatever it is, they will do it themselves. They will say things like, I know I can do this, or I can beat this thing, or I've got this far on my own, I'm gonna keep going. In such cases, I point out that all the attributes upon which they are planning to depend have been long present and of little use so far. I struggled with each step and took them like a vet-bound dog. In fact, when I first saw them written down, I ignored them successfully and took giant leaps in the contrary direction, which was, of course, downwards. I was afraid of change. For better or worse, I had devised a strategy for survival, a means of coping with my feelings, and I was terrified of what I might find if I relinquished it. A counsellor at the treatment centre where I got clean, herself a woman in recovery, surprised me when she said, "How clever of you to find drugs. Well done. You found a way to keep yourself alive." This made me feel quite tearful, I suppose because this woman, Jackie, didn't judge me or tell me I was stupid or tub-thumpingly declare that drugs kill. No, she told me I'd done well by finding something that made being me bearable. Addicts talking to one another are apt to find such means of connection. To be acknowledged as a person who was in pain and fighting to survive in my own muddled up and misguided way made me feel optimistic and understood. It is an example of the compassion addicts need from one another in order to change. Thinking about it, that time, early recovery, was lit up by moments of connection such as this. Addiction is a lonely business in whatever form it suffered. A paralyzing loop of unseen, hypnotic, negative thinking and destructive and harmful behavior. The momentum prevents you from getting off the carousel. Crisis is almost a blessing, providing cessation of a kind, and with it, the opportunity for change. On New Year's Eve 2002, with 17 days clean, I stood in an itchy suit outside a drink and drug free event at some kind of civic centre in Guildford, Surrey. It was dark outside, and inside it was much too bright, lit by the beaming smiles that only drink and drug free people can produce. Beaming clean, gleaming, everything's gonna be all right smiles like three little birds by Bob Marley's doorstep. This was not my prognosis. Everything was not gonna be all right. Everything was gonna carry on being fucking shit. The night itself could be flung on the pile of evidence that stretched like the Tower of Babel into the empty heavens and offended no one but me. Exhibit A, squared to the power of 10, this night, this drinkless, sexless, funless, hopeless night, is further proof that I do not belong here, that life is not fun, that there is nothing to aspire to or dream about. Joy is a distraction, and drink and drugs are the best solution I can think of to cope with the way this feels. I was 27, of course, and running on a painful program of self-destruction. I turned to Lucy, who'd thankfully followed me out of the leisure center where this social catastrophe was happening, and with what I hoped was incredible poignancy and gravitas said, "It's not for me all this, Lucy, this yes we can, just say no bullshit. This is not my future. We won't look back on this and say, oh, Russell used to be a drug addict, but through the help of others, belief in a higher power and a commitment to being of service, he turned his life around. I like drugs. I like drinking. I don't like these people, and I don't want to be like them. My story is that I'm an addict, I'm going to stay an addict, and I'll be dead in my 20s. I meant it. Ornamented though it was by the narcissism and self-pity that governed me then, it was wrought with twisted sincerity. Yet, by some power beyond me, I have not used since that day. That cannot be due to self-will or good fortune, because I had both of those the entire time. It has come from a change in consciousness, induced by a new ideology. This ideology will help anyone who's prepared to accept it. I found that quite hard. I don't trust people, and I don't trust institutions. I don't like being told what to do, and I don't like the idea that I'm not in charge of my own destiny. I came to see life differently because other people were kind to me, supportive to me, and showed me another way. This doesn't mean that today this recital is relayed using rays of conscious kinetic energy that I radiate from my eyes and lungs and mouth and soul. I still struggle. But the system I'm outlining is like having another channel installed in my mind. I can still flick back the switch to Sky News or Babe Station, but I know there is a different frequency of being which I can experience. And when I do, I am kinder and more loving, and I feel better being alive. I also do not need to drink and take drugs to cope. Ideally, the first three steps can be worked in the time it takes to nod your head three times. Yes, I have a problem. Yes, I see it could improve. Yes, I see that I will need help, and I will accept that help. When someone is in that frame of mind, they have a chance. This is the state that you need to achieve to recover. As the step in its original form says, we made a decision. This is because it's understood that there will likely be prevarication and procrastination. Making a decision to turn your life and your will over means you have acknowledged that your previous attempts to run your own life have failed, that you have had to resort to addictive behavior to cope, and now you cannot stop on your own steam. In making a decision, we are conceding mentally and hopefully spiritually that we cannot do this alone anymore. That for me was the beginning of humility. To say I need help is not an easy thing for many people. We'd prefer to manipulate people into meeting our needs or to struggle along without them. Step three has profound and ongoing philosophical merit. I am now continually asking for help. Like most of these steps, their practice begins in crisis but continues in everyday living. For me, making a decision to hand over my life and my will is a daily practice. Each morning, as my habitual negative pattern of mental self-damnation fires up, I interject mentally with my intent to hand my day over. Somebody once said, "What does that mean, handing my life and will over to God? I might as well put it in the microwave," which I thought was pretty funny because the idea of bundling up your life and will into a ball and kicking it into a benevolent ether doesn't sound like an intelligent way to tackle despair. Step three means we ask for help. When I notice that I am agitated, fearful, or confused, I no longer, as in the past, plow on. I pause. I have learned to better commune with my feelings. mentally, the inner dialogue is like this. Wow, that is a really hurtful email. I hate the person who sent me that. I must be pretty worthless for someone to talk to me that way. I think I'll send a response so loaded with invective and syntactic daggers, this person will never bother me again. I read an email that disturbs me. I feel mobilized in my gut. My body responds first. Then my thinking alters. This is a trivial example of the ordinary junction that previously would set in motion a chain of events that would lead to me needing to drink or use or act out. The kind of everyday challenge that I needed an addictive supplement to tackle. Now that I've made a decision not to live that life, I have to recommit to it every time I encounter an event that triggers my old way of thinking. This happens more than you might think or notice. It happens to me all the time. I rely on the support of other people who work 12-step programs, so when I get a troubling email and the accompanying troubling feeling, I call someone and ask for help. This tiny act of ingenuity disrupts enormously my previous model of behavior, which was feel, think, maybe, act. The compulsion is ingrained and barely conscious, so I have to be vigilant to spot the opportunity to change direction. My life in active addiction was an unexamined matrix of disturbances held at bay by addictive behavior. The stimulus-response relationship between me, myself, and the world was like this. I'm lonely. Have sex. I'm sad. Get drunk. I'm bored. Eat a cake. It probably wasn't even that articulate. It was pre-step one, unconscious. Once I'd admitted I had a problem, drinking and drugs and the impulse to use them were under observation. When I came to believe there was another way to live, this gave me pause, a moment to consider. When I made a decision to turn over my will, that meant that when the impulse to use came, I conceded that my mental processes were no longer to be trusted. I had to ask for help. That meant in the early days of my recovery, I was continually on the phone to someone with more clean time than me, blurting out pleas and gut-felt laments, basically the result of being in a world with other people in it, newly removed from the insulation of active addiction. I've never found it easy to cope with being on our planet with my spitting, ever-evolving, visceral currents and the mad, erratic sting of human relationships. I live on an uncertain and volatile circuit. I lived without a program. People are always telling you there's no guidebook to being human, but there are loads. The problem, I think, is in translation. How do I make the complex King James Desert books and lurid and beautiful texts of India sing to me in my solitude? How can we, accustomed to living in 5-second slices of mindless life, reach back through millennia to hold hands with Vishnu or sit in acceptance with the Buddha? In the world I'm from, no one suggested that anything other than material means could provide me with a solution. Get a job. Do some exercise. You need a nice girlfriend. A hobby. More friends. A palm-held device. An upgrade. Lose a few pounds. No one said, let go of all this. Look within. There is no real power in the world of things. Only distraction and pleasure. I've heard 12-step groups referred to as a cult, and it could be argued that any group with a system of beliefs is a cult. In working a 12-step program, I don't feel like I've joined a cult, but that I've been liberated from one. The cult that told me I'm not enough, that I need to be famous to be of value, that I need to have money to live a worthwhile life, that I should affiliate, associate, and identify on the basis of colour and class, that my role in life is to consume, that I was to live in darkness, only occasionally lit up by billboards and screams, always framing the smiling face of someone trying to sell me something. Sell me phones and food and prejudice, low cost and low values, low frequency thinking. We are in a cult by default. We just can't see it because its boundaries lie beyond our horizons. If you're like me, you'll begin to see that you've learned to live with dissatisfaction, always vaguely aggrieved, believing there is nothing better out there for you. there is. I adjusted to misery and medicated myself with drugs. Alone, there was no way out. In the culture I was from, with the beliefs that I had, there was no way I could change. No way. Until I made a decision to turn my life and will over to something other than me. What I sometimes call the ulterior realm, the unified truth between constant mutations, or the care of God as I understand God. Unlike most cults, a 12-step program tells you to choose your own concept of a higher power. My understanding of God before I got clean was rather pejorative, that God was an abstract authority icon used to placate the many so that the few could act with impunity, or that God was a necessary placeholder for the mysteries of being while we waited for science to explain everything, or that it was just an irrelevant attempt to get me to be moral like Blue Peter or an AIDS awareness leaflet. I was invited to review my attitude to the idea of transcendent conscious phenomena when my silly little life lay in tatters amidst the dregs. This was a tentative process. While I could admit my life was a mess, I wasn't yet willing to yield all of my theories. I'm still clever, I thought. I've worked hard on some of these beliefs. What is a belief, really? A thought in your mind that you like having. If you like having it, it must be of benefit. It either improves your life or helps you to rationalize how bad your life is. I can't think of another reason to have a belief. Step 3 is a chance for us to review how our beliefs are working for us, whether the beliefs are pulling their weight. In step 2, we came to believe that things could be better. Now we are confronted with how that is likely to be achieved, and here's the knockout punch. It isn't likely to be by repeating what we were already doing. Let's consider you personally for a moment. You've bought this audio recording or gone to the trouble of stealing it, and you deserve a little attention. You've admitted you have a problem. You believe change is possible. Are you now going to cling to the idea that it is you that's going to instantiate that change? Using what? Your brain? Your scheming and insight? I'm afraid to tell you that these are the very qualities that have deposited you in this jam. Don't feel bad about it. I'll bet you're not as fucked up as I was. I was reluctant to let go of my plan in spite of its evident inefficiency. Me and the plan just need a bit more time, I used to think. A bit more time and a bottle of wine. A bit more time and one more pipe. A bit more time and a slice of cake. A bit more time and a threesome for luck. My plan operated in confinement. My plan walked with heavy steps in a deep, well-trodden trench dug by the years of unconscious trudging. How about another plan? No way! Let's look at step 1 again. Okay. So, you see you're fucked, look. You admitted it. Yes. Okay, that's very good. Now, step 2, it could be better than this, couldn't it? Yeah, we did agree that, yes. Excellent. Now, very slowly, what is it about your plan in your head using your brain, the brain you've always had, that you think is going to this time, more than all the other times, which we saw in step 1, never, ever work? What is it about you and your plan that is so hard to let go of?
Well, it's my plan. I thought of it.
And that's very nice. But it doesn't work. We've proved it. I tell you what, how about a compromise?
Oh, yes please, I love compromises.
Why don't we try a new plan? Just for today. And if you don't like it, you can go back to your old plan.
Oh, okay then.
Ha! Got him. Just for today, would you be willing to consider a different plan? Would you be prepared to follow guidance, to accept help? Are you willing to accept that your previous way has let you down? It isn't your fault. You needn't beat yourself up for not having had a better plan. Just let it go. At this point, the possibility for real change is emerging, real freedom. Everything that has been sought through the ineffectual facsimiles is going to become available. Step 3 exercises. Are you, on your own, going to unfuck yourself? Step 3 is about accepting help and relinquishing our plan. Our plan is based on our current program as experienced through our thoughts and feelings. It is a vital shift in perspective that needs to be embraced. You will prevaricate. I do. I feel the surge of will and reclaim the reins of the hedonic chariot. Let's go through these questions together. Am I feeling unsatisfied, limited, empty, or anxious in my relationships? Yes, I get pissed off with the people I work with. I want more from my romantic partner. My family don't understand me. Do my feelings lead me to make or not make decisions, take or not take actions, or say or not say things that I then regret? Yeah, this is always happening. My feelings surge up and dominate me. I'm always thinking I shouldn't have done that, or I wish I'd said this. Am I suffering from misery, depression, unhappiness, or low self-worth? Yes, I feel all of these things. I can see why you're querying the efficacy of my plan. Am I suffering from anxiety, doubt, or perfectionism? Am I projecting imaginary future scenarios, then worrying about them? Yes, I'm afraid much of the time. I do try to anticipate the future, hoping that I can somehow manage it. Is it becoming clear to me that my plan is not working? Yes, if I am this discontent in this many areas, my plan does need to change. Is it clear that I need a new plan that is not sourced from my own head and drives if I am to find fulfillment? Yes, I can see that I need a new way, a new path. I have exhausted my self-divined methods. This plan of mine is like a mind virus of self-obsession. Can I surrender it? Am I open to a different plan? Am I open to being guided? Yes. How many more times? Tell me what to do. We are trapped in a way of being that is not working. Here are some categories which will help us amend our perspective. We can usually identify the root of pain and spiritual discomfort within these areas. 1. Pride. What I think you think about me. 2. Self-esteem. What I think about myself. 3. Personal relations. The script I give others. 4. Sexual relations, as above, pertaining to sex. 5. Ambitions, what I want in life, my overall vision of my perfect self. 6. Security, what I need to survive. 7. Finances, money and how it affects my feelings. It's good to be reminded of these categories as we undertake step 4.